Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, it's another week, another playoff week. We're coming off the holiday. First of all, how was your Christmas?
It was great. Thanks for asking, Jim. I hope yours was the same.
It was. We had multiple celebrations, her family, then my family, and the really highlight of both of them, we got baby announcements from both sides, Chris.
That's very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be a great uncle or a great uncle or something like that, but we're all excited about it. We also had in my family, it was nice. There's the next generation, a little one. We had a one-year-old there for the Christmas. Made all the difference in the world having a little one. We've gone several years with only adults, so nothing like having the little ones.
Yeah, it definitely makes it livelier, if nothing else, but a lot more fun, too. You want to know what the highlight of or at least one of them, of my holiday was, Jim?
Yeah.
Jason Candle and the Toledo Rockets playing to win in the game above Sports Bowl. I enjoyed that thoroughly, but most importantly, what I enjoyed about it was we were visiting my cousin, and his dad, along with my dad, are probably the two people who are most responsible for both he and I being Penn State football fans. And his two boys were in the room while we were watching that game. And we were basically teaching them to root against Pitt in the same way our dads did once upon a time. So it was like the circle of life.
Well, I had on my notes, I wanted to talk to you about that Pitt game. And I guess it's the second overtime.
Utter cowardice. Complete stupidity.
Has the ball on the 1 yard line. I won't even talk about third down. Let's go fourth down.
Yeah.
Fourth and one. They're down by the field goal that Toledo scored. All they have to do is get 1 yard for the touchdown and the win. And if he chooses to kick the field goal, he puts himself in a position where they start swapping the two-point tries. And they have to actually get a win. They have to get in from, the three-yard line on a single play. Play for the win. I could not understand that call at all. Can you please explain it to me other than Pat Narduzzi's an idiot?
Yeah, no, it was total foolishness. To your point, what you had in front of you was a do-or-die play to win the game from, maybe the one, a short one, could have been from the half-yard line. And if you kick the field goal, you doom yourself to a future of having to constantly run what? Do or die plays. I thought it was from the two, whatever. The two, the three. The point is, it's only going to be one and done opportunities going forward. And none of them are going to be as close to pay dirt as you are right now. So why not just go? Stupid. Anyway, just a cowardly decision that I couldn't be more thankful for. TOLEDO.
And you know what? Does this not remind you of a few years ago when Pitt was at Penn State?
Absolutely.
And he had a situation where he could have gone for the touchdown, only chooses to kick the field goal. And it's incredible. And then his post-game quote was he wanted to put it in his players' hands. Well, there it is. It's in their hands. Fourth and one. Go score the touchdown and win the game, Chris.
Yeah, Jim, you're probably like me. In hoping that Pat Narduzzi will get a lifetime contract at Pitt.
Of course.
And he does seem like in many ways, a perfect culture fit for that institution and that fan base. I think he is in hot water already. I think his job is probably safe this offseason, although I wouldn't say 100% safe. But with that new athletic director coming in and the focus being on winning games for the purposes of generating revenue, I think next season might be it for Pat in Pittsburgh, unless they can get something going.
And just one more time, Chris, explain to me that next generation that you're teaching to root against Pitt. How old are they?
Oh, you know, like elementary school age, both of them.
Okay, that's prime time. That's the time to learn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same age my cousin and I were. I mean, really, it was like a time warp. It was pretty cool in a way. And to that point, I think people who have followed me on any media property know that I'm a longtime fan, which is, I think, the exception, really, for how the majority comes to Penn State fandom. They usually get there later in life, either because they go to school there or they know someone who goes to school, they have kids who go to school there, whatever. I don't think the majority of the fan base is like me, raised from knee-high to bleed blue and white. But that's me, and I'm old enough to remember the Pitt-Penn State rivalry from when it actually mattered, when those games were played on Thanksgiving weekend, and it was up there with the likes of the Iron Bowl and the game between Ohio State and Michigan. It's considered one of the top college football rivalries. So I would love to see that reignited at some point. I'd love for it to be an every year game. I think I am in a not insignificant minority, but a minority nonetheless of a fan base. I think most of our fans have moved on or just never knew to care in the first place. Because to my point, most people have come in and they think about Penn State as a Big Ten team. They think about our Big Ten rivals. They think about wanting to see more variety in the non-conference schedule. So again, I saw some chirping, which I guess I don't understand, but it's easy clicks online. I saw some chirping from the Pittsburgh media folks this past week about Penn State fans who are having a little bit of a laugh at Pitt losing a game. And they're like, oh, well, I thought Penn State fans didn't care about Pitt. No, some of us do. Some of us, the rivalry's fun. There were some of us who embraced that. But here's the reality. Most of us ain't on Twitter. Okay, the people who are forking over the majority of the cash, who Pat Kraft is most worried about, like Pat Kraft is not going to lose me. He could schedule, I don't know, Nevada, FIU, and Villanova in the non-conference schedule, and I'd still have my butt in the seat every week.
I think you just named the 25 schedule, haven't you?
I did. The majority of the fan base, I think, is just not – they just don't care. So when you see – some writer for a Pittsburgh paper cherry pick one tweet, okay, which could not be less representative of anything other than a guy with a Twitter account and say, oh, I found proof that Penn State fans just can't get their minds off Pitt football. Do me a favor, and if you're online, chirp back at them.
Do you know what, Chris? Well, first of all, a couple things.
Number hit them one, with logic.
I'm with you. I would love to see them play Pitt again. I understand the logic of those who say Penn State has nothing to gain by playing Pitt every year, only correct, something to lose.
Yeah, and that is a very valid point. They have not made their program relevant enough for it to make sense for Penn State to incur the annual risk. You gain nothing by winning, and you risk losing a significant amount if you don't.
But, Chris, I dislike Pitt enough. It makes that game matter to me.
Amen. Okay.
I love that play games that matter to me. And in that recent series, watching Penn State beat Pitt, it's a glorious thing. And you bring back those memories, as you talked about, playing on Thanksgiving weekend. I know I've shared this on the show previously, but one of my great memories as a kid was day after Thanksgiving, me and Dad watching that game together, eating leftovers, and being allowed to eat in the living room. Watching the game, okay? It was a very, very special day in the Galante household, Chris. It was special. So well, we really enjoyed that.
The other thing is the folks who publicly carry the banner for Pitt, the talking heads in the local media, their fan base online, even some of the coaches and administrators there, like they need to grasp this concept that when you are in a negotiation, which is what renewing the rivalry would be, because you've got to get both athletic directors to sign on. When you are in a negotiation in which you do not hold the leverage, right? When you are in the disadvantaged position, you can't insult your way to gaining more leverage. Like if I'm already disinclined to listen to what you have to say, and all you are is an intolerable, obnoxious jerk publicly and privately, I'm not going to sit back and say, oh, well, here, allow me to surrender some of my leverage then because you've been so pleasant to deal with.
Yes, exactly. And Pitt will never learn that because they can't accept that little brother role that they are in. And again, you and I, we were raised to be Penn State fans. It took hold with me when I was like 8 and 9 years old. That was the back-to-back undefeated years of 68 and 69.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is the way to become a fan. My uncle was a longtime Penn State college professor. My brothers went. Anyway, it is special, and that playing Pitt is special, I would think. Well, let's real quick, a couple other of the bowl games that went in. Cam Ward, for those who didn't see it, the Pop-Tart Bowl is incredibly fun. But the Miami quarterback, Cam Ward, might be the first quarterback chosen, second at worst, in the NFL draft this year. Chose to play the first half of the game, Chris, and set a record for touchdowns, and then chose to sit the second half and watch his team lose. Your thoughts on that?
Man, I know I'm supposed to have some like fiery hot take about how this is ruining the sport or just another example of how the transfer portal and blah, 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 blah. No, I don't care. For number one, I don't care about Miami and the Pop-Tarts Bowl to begin with. Second of all, we had a bunch of guys play the first half and then sit out the Peach Bowl last year. Like, this is hollering into the wind to me. I'm sorry. I know I'm not making great radio, but if I'm not honest about the stuff that really doesn't chap my rear end with the audience, then they're not going to believe me when I really am passionate about something and I want to share. I don't give a crap about Cam Ward or whether he played a quarter or a half or a whole football game or Miami or the Pop-Tarts Bowl or any of it. I just don't care.
The issue, it doesn't change my world that Miami lost that game, perhaps because he sat it out. The part, Chris, that I don't understand is as an individual player who's worked so hard with his teammates for so long, and I had the same feeling a year ago with the Penn State players, you choose to stand on the sideline and watch your teammates lose when you could help them win. That I find hard to swallow. All right, that is it for quarter number one. Lots more to talk about when we come back. With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris Buccanani. I am Jim Galante. We are talking college football. And Chris, you know what? I want to divert just a little bit to NFL football.
Okay.
You and I are Eagles fans.
Yes, okay? Sir.
You were talking about watching Pitt lose and how satisfying that is, especially with Penn State playing well, getting into the playoffs. Is there anything more satisfying as an Eagles fan than this past weekend when their win over the Cowboys, they crushed the Cowboys. It's the second time this season they crushed the Cowboys. They clinched a division with the win. And Saquon Barkley breaks the 2,000-yard barrier. And him do every time he hits a milestone with the Eagles, it's just sticking that knife in the back just a little bit more of the New York Giants.
Yeah, and then the Giants, senselessly won against the Indianapolis Colts, therefore further imperiling their chances to get the number one overall pick in April's draft. So, yeah, if you're an Eagles fan, it was a great weekend. I'm sure there are a lot of Giants and other NFC East fans in the audience, and this is a big tent here. I'm not trying to antagonize anybody. We could all agree to disagree on the pro football stuff. I am thrilled for Saquon, man. That is he is such a good dude, and he was such a great Nittany Lion. Every time he has success in the pros, I think most Penn State fans are happy, even the ones who have mixed feelings about it because he's playing in the division. That's kind of how I was when he was suiting up for the New York Giants. And it's great. It is great publicity for Penn State. When you have a matchup with Dallas and Philadelphia, I think we said this the last time they played. And the two marquee stars on each side of the ball are Saquon Barkley and Micah Parsons. That's a great message to be sending out to the young talent who are going to be visited by James Franklin and his staff on the recruiting trail. Speaking of Micah Parsons, I saw that he and Chop Robinson are, I think, one and two or in the top three or four in pass rush win rate, which granted is a PFF stat. And I know PFF is kind of controversial, but for what it is, those two guys are both up there, man. Penn State is having a tremendous amount of success in the NFL right now as a brand. And when you look at the recruiting rankings of the various classes James Franklin has brought in, and then the number of players we have exported to the next level, including the percentage of them who are playing at an elite level, like a Pro Bowl / All Pro level, I actually think it's fair to ask the question, which I know is going to be loved, absolutely loved by some of James's fans around here. Is the guy who has a reputation as a great recruiter actually, in terms of himself and his staff, better at developing talent than he is at recruiting it? Because we're still getting circles run around us by some of our other brethren in the Big Ten, as well as some of the other top programs in the SEC in terms of recruiting class rankings. But we're going blow for blow with them when it comes to developing NFL talent. So we're taking, you know, theoretically slightly lesser raw material and turning out just as many impact pros. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation to have in the offseason.
It is. Well, I I'm sure we will have it, but I want to ask, when you talk about, yes, James Franklin has the reputation of being a good recruiter, and you're asking, is it really his ability to develop the talent? I'm going to ask you this, though, Chris. Is it his ability to identify talent? Is it that their style of recruiting where they say, you know what, this is a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. We'll take our chances on that type of player because we have faith in our strength and conditioning. We have faith in our coach's ability to develop. So those guys that maybe in high school, they're not five-star guys, but they have a high side, and James Franklin's able to identify that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. In fact, I think that's accurate. And you can measure that also by the number of recruits who end up by their senior season being elite recruits, who we sometimes don't get because other programs that are better at securing that type of talent swoop in and take them out from under our nose. Like Justin Fields is probably the biggest name that comes to mind there. But Penn State was in on Justin Fields before almost anyone else. Penn State was in on Drew Aller before he was a five-star recruit. So and there are many, many examples of that where our staff sniffs out a diamond in the rough before the recruiting services or the other big programs in the country catch up.
I think you brought up the two best examples, the two quarterbacks, but I also look at a guy like Chop Robinson, who was at Maryland, and boom, you know, he comes to Penn State and blossoms. Arnold Lee Bikiti, who comes in from Temple, right, and becomes a star at Penn State. Yes, it's both identifying and developing. All right, let's move forward. As I mentioned, it is playoff week. It's quarterfinal week. And Chris, everything is so new. I don't think we've yet, as a fan base, and I would suspect it's with every fan base throughout the country, understand what we're supposed to feel with this coming, the emotion of it, that, boy, this is really a big deal this week. This is the quarterfinals of the national championship. This is the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. If I'm trying to think about like what is my own sense in terms of interactions with the fans and get a buzz here locally. I think if to the extent that's true, it's probably just because of the wonky calendar where this is happening in the middle of the week instead of on a weekend. It just throws people's sense of timing off. I think by the time we get into, you know, it's New Year's Eve and there's games kicking off, I think people will have adjusted.
Yeah, I think it'll register when there, and I think it's going to get great ratings through New Year's Day, all the playoff games. But like I said, I think you're right. It's just kind of it's a weird, strange schedule, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's even stranger the next round where it's not around the holiday, but you're going to play in Miami in the Orange Bowl on a Thursday night.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we wouldn't want to infringe on the NFL's territory, Jim. So, yeah, I think it's going to be strange. And don't forget that in terms of the ratings success or lack thereof of these broadcasts, they're all dependent on casual fans, people who are not deeply invested in college football, many of whom are probably primarily NFL folks who just might tune in out of interest. And this is the first year of this format. So I think if it's exciting and there are good games, and certainly there are a lot of big brands involved, Penn State, Texas, Georgia, Notre Dame, I think you'll probably see maybe bigger numbers in the future than you might this year. I don't know. Maybe I'm underselling it. But if you look at it from the perspective of somebody who's not living and dying with the week in, week out of the sport in the regular season, especially if you're an NFL person who's very used to the structured, okay, this is the tiebreaker. This is the system. You're either in or you're out, and this is how you get there. The Byzantine system by which college football has selected its champions and handled its postseason through most of their lives is probably pretty confusing to them. So the fact that we're now, depending on your age, on like the fourth or fifth different method of picking a champion, I don't know that like everybody is going to immediately just turn on a dime and adjust to it, nor should we expect them to.
Well, I think, and obviously we follow it closely, but it's part of what we do, but it's that different feel to it. And I'm not used to this many games with Penn State, you know, like that NFL structure of playoffs. Sure. Win in advance. It's almost when the playoff game was at Beaver Stadium against SMU, you know, the emotional feel was like a bowl game that we just happen to have on the home field, and then you win it, you walk off the field, have that good feeling at the end of the year. And it's like, oh no, got to get ready to gear up for the next round, which is actually a great feeling, Chris, that there's more. It's like bonus football that we're getting, but it's a totally new feeling.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm admittedly having a little bit of difficulty adjusting to it going this late into January, but it's a good problem to have. Let's put it that way.
Yes, it's a great problem to have. But let's shift gears a little bit. I'm not sure how much of James Franklin's press conference this week that you saw. I thought it was interesting, and I want to give James Franklin credit again. I was very much, I had an issue with the media. With the whole, when Bo Prabula hit the transfer portal, everybody was up in arms. The NCAA is the worst organization in the world. They are, but this wasn't on them. It's like, how could you have these rules that do this, but no one would come up with a solution? I thought James Franklin in his press conference gave perhaps the best answer to the question. It wasn't just, oh, it's all wrong, it's the worst thing in the world. He talked about ways to make it better, including pushing the season up a week, maybe get rid of the conference championship games. I thought he gave a great answer to the question, Chris.
Yeah, I personally like both of those ideas. Those are things I've campaigned for and said I thought should happen over the years. Here's the problem, why it's not as easy for me or for someone like James to say it, is that it comes down to the money involved, especially with conference championship game weekend. I mean, I firmly believe that there's got to be a way to replace that revenue because they'll never give it up, which is fine. But I'm not creative enough to come up with one off the top of my head. Well, so, they need to think about it. But, again, going back to that conversation about ratings for these games, James or Jim, if we, and by we, I mean the audience, we show up in big numbers, they're not going to be motivated to change anything.
Well, there's never going to be that protest, oh, we don't show up for the conference championship games, although those conference championship games, you could probably get, I think in Indianapolis, you could have gotten in the stadium for $12. But I just think expand the playoffs to four more teams, which creates four more games, and that replaces the four of the big four conference championship games and the revenue that would come from it. I would think a playoff game would get as good a ratings. Anyway, Chris, I'll let you respond to that when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. We're talking about the college football playoffs. And you know what, Chris? This week, it's with Boise State in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona. If Penn State could take care of business, beat Boise State, they're going to be off to the Orange Bowl in Miami. And Collegiate Athletic Travel, if you want to follow those Nittany Lions, if they win against Boise State down to Miami, you need to check them out. Go to athletictravel.com. They'll be updating as the week goes through, especially if the Nittany Lions beat Boise State. You'll see the updates. They're going to have travel packages. They're going to have land-only packages. Just keep checking on athletictravel.com, or you could give them a call at 814-238-4987 to get all of the details. Chris, fingers crossed that they get past Boise State. We were talking about James Franklin's press conference and some of the things he talked about. Money is the root of every decision that's made in college football, like every other business. They're in business. That's what they do. You asked the question, if they got rid of the conference championship games, how do they replace that revenue? I think at the very least, like us, I don't think it extends the season at all if you expanded the playoff to 16 teams. Those teams who were getting byes this past year, you take away that conference championship game, but they play in the first round. And instead of four home games for the playoffs, you get eight home games for the playoffs. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something they'll look at. That's probably the cleanest solution. I don't know if it's a case of cutting off your nose to spite your face, though, because I'm not sure that 12 isn't too many teams. I definitely think 16 would be too many to me. No question. I really, really do not want a 16 team tournament for the college football national championship. By the way, too bad, because we're going to have one almost assuredly.
Yeah.
But I just, going back to all the different ways they have selected a champion in this sport, I would love for them to just settle, since they decided that this was a good approach, settle and let it play out over the course of several years before we lift up the hood and start tinkering around. But again, this is all, urinating into the wind, as it were, because I'm not going to get what I want on any of that. And going back to talking about attracting an audience, Jim, I was talking about, do I hate that we have a system that allowed for Penn State to not have its backup quarterback for the playoff games? Like, yeah, I think that's patently ridiculous. Is it going to affect my viewership or my viability as a customer for the business of college football in any meaningful way? Absolutely not. It won't even make the slightest scratch or dent in it. So I don't know that there's going to be much motivation for them to find an immediate solution, because I think my experience and viewpoint on that is probably reflective of the majority.
Well, the thing of it is, Chris, too, I even asked the question, was the hullabaloo about Bo Prabhula leaving much ado about nothing? Not for the specific situation for Penn State. You know, God forbid Drew Aller gets hurt. That's when it would really have an effect on Penn State. We could debate, and I'm going to ask you the question, if it affects Penn State because we're losing the Bo Prabhula package. I'll ask you that in a bit. But I wonder if it's just such a unique situation for a backup quarterback to actually have a part of a team's game plan in the playoffs. That makes the Bo Prabhula situation unique and different, I think, than anybody else's. Would there be another backup quarterback in the playoffs, in a playoff environment, who A, would be such a popular candidate for the transfer portal, and B, actually have an effect on the playoff team's game plan? Arch Manning is probably the only guy I could think of who would create, you know, so much interest as a backup quarterback. But I think it's a very unique situation, and I think that's why it's getting so much play.
I mean, I don't know. Preston Stone, the backup for SMU, was in the transfer portal when they came up to Beaver Stadium, and Bo Prabhula was gone. And had Arch Manning decided that he was going to ply his trade elsewhere, he would have jumped up in front of Bo and would have commanded a heck of a lot more than the $1.5 million that Prabhula reportedly got. So the fact that in the first playoff, conceivably 25% of the participants could be dealing with that situation indicates to me that it might not be as rare as we imagine it would be. And even if it is, I don't care. It's still preposterous. It's ridiculous. It's crazy and crappy. And yes, it makes the sport worse, but neither I nor I suspect almost anyone else cares enough that we're going to tune out or not buy stuff that say Penn State or whatever our favorite team is on them, or affect their business model in any meaningful way. So it's an acceptable level of collateral damage for them from a business perspective, I imagine.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk Penn State, Boise State. First of all, Chris, it's at the Fiesta Bowl. Penn State can't get beat there. They never do.
I assume you're setting me up to point out that neither can Boise State, because they also are 3-0 in that game and had one of the most memorable college bowl games of all time there in the Fiesta.
I wouldn't do that to you, Chris. Well, maybe.
But yes, would. Yes. Penn State is 7-0. The Fiesta Bowl has been very, very kind to us.
There was a national championship game there, Chris, and against those Miami Hurricanes. It was a historic game because it had never happened before. It was always the bowls were locked in. If for people too young to remember the history, the Fiesta Bowl was the one bowl that wasn't locked in anywhere, and they could take two independents like Penn State and Miami and create this special event that year, which was Penn State versus Miami. It was one versus two. And until that day, Chris, the Fiesta Bowl was a very minor bowl. That made the Fiesta Bowl what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the history of it is fascinating, and that was a savvy business decision by the Fiesta Bowl folks And the broadcast folks, I think it was ABC that aired that game.
NBC, I believe NBC. It was. Yes.
And so, yeah, that one game laid the groundwork for a lot of change in the world of college football.
And it probably is that game that we could thank for the playoff format because of it got crazy great ratings. And I think that's what let people in college football know that, you know what, the bowl games were not enough. That they could – now, it took them years and years to do this. It took us almost 40 years to get to this point, Chris, but that was the origins of it.
Yeah, it also demonstrated to the networks that live college football was a viable primetime product.
Yes, and I remember reading, and I remember it from watching it, too, once it was reminded that it was on – I think it was a Friday night. But NBC, before the broadcast, made this special announcement that this special showing of college football game means we're going to exempt seeing whatever was the standard series.
It was Miami Vice. They were terrified. They were like, we're preempting Miami Vice. This is insanity to put on a football game. Who's going to watch this?
Turned out a lot of people watched, Chris.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, the precursor to everything that came after that. And I'm not sure many fans, younger fans especially, realize that that's the case.
If that game would have been a dud, right, if it was a boring game or it didn't bring the intrigue of Miami versus Penn State and that good guys versus bad guys vibe and Jimmy Johnson versus Joe Paterno and all of that and didn't command the national audience that it did, we might be living in a totally different world of college football because that really was the pebble that started the avalanche that now has us here in the world of the mega conference and Fox and ESPN, you know, shelling out the mega millions that they are for conference broadcast rights. I'm not saying none of that would have happened, but I think almost certainly it would have unfolded very differently and probably on a different time scale.
All right, just a quick quiz. I know you know the answer to all these questions, these trivia questions, but just to the education of our younger listeners, Penn State ended up winning that game by the score of?
14-10.
And who made the interception at the final play to end the game?
Pete Giftopoulos.
And who was the Miami quarterback who threw that interception?
Vinny Interceptiverde.
And how many interceptions did he throw that game?
You know what? That one I'm probably going to screw up. It was either four or five.
I think it was five. I think that was his fifth one. So if we made a mistake, please let us know. All right. When we're approaching the end of the third quarter, Chris, so I want to really get into the game. Fourth quarter, let's talk about it. Let's start right now, though. Penn State. Boise State. Tell me what you know about Boise State.
Well, they play in the Mountain West Conference. No, seriously, I actually think that's a good place to start because one thing I know about Boise State is that their online fan base, all online fan bases are horrible, by the way, 100% of them, including ours, their online fan base might be the most detestable collection of human beings I've ever encountered on the internets. I hate them all. Like, seriously, I actually hope Boise, Idaho burns to the ground at this point after dealing with these skunks for like 5 days. And I previously, I liked that program and I rooted for them. Now, if you told me that Boise, Idaho got nuked, I probably would struggle to feel sympathy for the residents there. And it's no fault of their own. I'm sure they're nice people. It's what are these idiots online? They have the worst online fan base, the absolute worst. I can't wait for this game to be over just so I never have to see or interact with them ever again.
Okay, we're going to use that as our final note, nuking Boise, Idaho. And just for clarification, it was Chris Buchanani who said that, not me. We'll talk more Penn State, Boise State when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We were just talking about the nuclear annihilation of Boise, Idaho when we finished up our last segment.
I'm joking. Of course. Of course. But these people, from an online perspective, are contemptible scumbags, Jim. I always draw the distinction. There are the living, breathing human fans of a team with whom you might interact in the old school way of sharing the same physical space and having eye contact and vocal communication. Mostly fine. Practically every team. Your mileage may vary based on the fan base and the part of the country, but by and large, when there are consequences attached to what you say and you can't hide behind the veil of anonymity and you're not, you know, just firing off from a keyboard behind a screen in the proverbial mother's basement, it's a completely different experience. Every online fan base is horrible, so you just rate them all on a scale of just disgustingly bad. And in my experience, I've not had anybody, any group this whole season come even close to the Boise fans.
Any specific case that you want to mention?
No, they're just miserable. And they clearly have like massive insecurity issues that they compensate for by being rude and obnoxious and arrogant and delusional. And I just don't like them. So it's good. It's probably made the game more interesting.
All right, let's talk
about
the game.
They don't like us either. Trust me. They're not fans of any blue blood program who they view as having had the world handed to them on a silver platter.
Well, we're going to find out come Tuesday night. Let's talk about the game itself. Penn State, 11-point favorite or so against Boise State. I've seen 10.5 somewhere. I've seen 11.5 somewhere. The obvious starting point for Boise State is running back Ashton Gentry. Key to the game, stop him. Tell me the rest. What more do we need to know about Boise State's team itself?
Well, this will be interesting to you as an NL East and a baseball guy. Do you know that their quarterback Maddox Madsen is named after Greg Maddox?
I did not know, but you gave me another reason not to like them.
Indeed. I apparently, he is from an entire family of children with sports-related nicknames.
And what do you know what the other
name,
ones are?
His full name, Jim, is Maddox Jeter Madsen.
Oh, wait. Stop. His first and middle name are an Atlanta Brave and a New York Yankee.
And a New York Yankee.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
No,
oh my God.
I know. Hard to believe that he plays for a team with the most insufferable online fan base.
Oh, my goodness.
And Maddox has five siblings. Mick, named after Mickey Mantle. Murphy, named after Dale Murphy. Mays, named after Willie. McGuire, named after Mark. And his sister, Macy Joe, is named after Joe DiMaggio. Not making that up. Thanks to the good, the hard work of the good people at fortheblogging.com for providing that research that we actually didn't end up using on the obligatory pregame show.
But you know what? I love that information. Makes me Willie Mays, Joe DiMaggio, okay. Many of the others, not so much so. let's get back to the team and on the field. It's Ashton Jeanty. Tell me about the quarterback.
So Maddox Madison. So I think, look, relatively pedestrian versus the signal callers that Penn State may see if they advance past this game for the remainder of the playoffs. The one thing that you do worry about with Boise is that Jeanty, who, by the way, is a legitimate threat and a guy I love to watch play. And if I had a Heisman ballot, which I do not, but if I did, would have gotten my number one vote. I think what he did this season, what he meant to his team, who he is as a player this year and in the annals of college football, he's one of the greats and deserves to be remembered as such. And as a result, you ought to have a healthy respect and a little bit of fear for what that guy can do, especially if you can't bring him down on first contact, which, look, let's be honest, given the way our team tackles, will be a significant challenge throughout the evening in the Fiesta Bowl. You worry about the play-action passing game. You know, they are not going to – Boise, I don't think, is going to challenge Penn State down the field from an aerial perspective unless – they can get the defense to bite on play action plays where they can get some guys open in those situations. I don't like for Boise the matchup of our secondary versus their receivers or really what their quarterback can do and their offensive line versus our pass rush. But if we're not disciplined, we don't stay at home. And even if we do, and Jeanty just makes us pay because he's a great player, that the play action passing game to me is really the only way that they are going to threaten Penn State through the air.
But as you said, for Penn State's defense, it's about remaining disciplined.
And in terms of what we've seen out of the team all year, which is complementary football, one side of the ball picks up the other. This is the week for the offense to help the defense out and to put Boise in a situation where they're not able to keep the entire playbook open. Because if you can start putting downward pressure on them where they feel those seconds ticking away on the clock by opening up a significant double-digit lead, you know, you get into the 10 points, the two touchdown range, then maybe you force them to have to try to push the ball down the field. And that gives you a little bit of an advantage. It helps your defense and makes them more predictable. But again, the biggest issue is that Jeanty is a home run hitter. That guy can take – he can house a 70-yard touchdown and change the game instantaneously. Probably more dangerous as a threat to do that than Boise is to move the ball down the field on a 30- to 40-yard pass play, in my opinion.
And for that to happen, my concern is what you mentioned, the tackling. We've seen games where it just hasn't been good with this Penn State defense. If there's – an Achilles heel, that is it. Let's go to the other way. When Penn State has the ball, it's the environment being so different. I think if we're honest, Drew Aller struggled a bit. It was cold. It was windy at Beaver Stadium. It was a good day to count on the running game. We're going to have a 72-degree controlled indoor environment. No wind, Chris. How much does that play a factor for Drew Aller, or do you see Penn State, again, just try to say, we're going to establish the run, we're going to make that happen, and even if it doesn't happen early on, it will eventually happen with the running game?
Probably both. I do attribute the conditions as a major factor in the performance of the offense overall, and Drew Aller in particular versus SMU. That said, you think back to the Big Ten championship game and what the O-line and the running backs looked like in that climate-controlled, you know, fast track inside the dome. And I think, again, especially if you look at the way these teams will match up, and going back to the point about me kind of joking and saying, well, they're in the Mountain West, here's the reality of it. They are in the Mountain West, and they've not had to perform outside that one game against Oregon, which we can talk about a little bit, against the caliber of competition that anybody in any of the Power Four conferences are. Okay, I'm not going to turn this into a let's praise the Big Ten and the SEC. Any of the Power Four are unquestionably, you don't have to look at recruiting rankings, you just look at who goes to the NFL. Head and shoulders above the talent level in the Mountain West, and Penn State just has more talent. And so to me, will they probably have more success in the pass game? Yeah, they probably will, but I don't know that they need to. I think the philosophy you described, which is establish the run, and if you can't do it early, keep going, and eventually you will. I think that's the winning formula for Penn State. I really do. And I think this is a situation where you can very, in a traditional sense, run to set up the pass.
And you mentioned the Oregon game. I think what Boise State, perhaps their best quote-unquote win of the season was actually a loss at Oregon, where they lost by 3 points.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, classic example of how wonderful the Boise State fans are. So I said on Obligatory, I was like, let's remember, this is the second game of the season. You're a different team at the beginning of the year than you are at the end. And I said, the week before, Oregon struggled with Idaho, and they're terrible. And I had some Boise fan in the comments say, oh, Idaho's terrible. Okay, well, they made the second round of the FCS playoffs. Oh, okay. Oh, the second round of the FCS playoffs. Oh, excuse me. I didn't realize that. Well, now that changes everything. That makes sense why they would go blow for blow for the undefeated number one team in the country in their home stadium. Oh, they, you know, God forbid I speak ill of the Idaho Vandals in a way that upsets the delicate sensibilities of the online Boise State fan base.
Well, I think that's the thing. You know, Notre Dame, another team in this playoffs, they lost to Northern Illinois. Teams change through the season, and a one-off game doesn't change who they are. Oregon has shown themselves to be the best team through the regular season of college football. It is a feather in Boise State's cap that they stayed with them.
Yes.
At Oregon. It's a feather in their cap. It's it does say something for them, but it'd be a lot different if that happened in the in week 12 of the season.
Yeah, Oregon brought in a lot of transfers, and I thought it was obvious that they were still working to get all of them integrated and on the same page in those early weeks of the season. That was a fourth quarter game with Idaho. Does anybody with a working brain believe that Oregon wouldn't blow Idaho off the field by like six touchdowns if they played now? I'm saying have a healthy respect for this Boise team, but let's not sit here and convince ourselves that they are truly no better than a touchdown different from the Oregon Ducks.
All right, Chris, I need a prediction for the game.
38-24 Penn State.
Now, is that a kind of a lead all game, kind of dominate the game, or is that the late touchdown to cover for us degenerates?
Little column A, little column B. I think Boise hangs around, but I like what Mike the Mailman picked. Three minutes into the third quarter, you start to relax.
I will take that. If I can relax for more than one quarter, Chris, I will take that. All right, you heard it here first. Well, you probably gave that in the Obligatory show. You heard it here second.
I tacked on an extra field goal for Boise.
Oh, okay. Very good. That we got the updated pick. Thanks, Chris. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.